Welcome to Keeping Your Together in a Stressed World with Michelle Post and Scott Grossberg. Each week, we explore down and dirty ways to stop awfulizing, catastrophizing, going down the rabbit hole, and moving through all the craziness that is happening right now. We're here to create a community of like-minded people as we give you tips, tricks, and techniques for keeping sane in an unhinged world. And now, here are your hosts, Michelle Post and Scott Grossberg.
Hey, everybody. This is Scott Grossberg, one of your co-hosts for the podcast, Keeping Your Shit Together in a Stressed World. And I'm here with my co-host, Michelle Post. Hello, Michelle.
Hi, Scott.
You notice how my voice went up? Hello, Michelle.
So Hello, Michelle. Maybe you were happy to see me.
I am. I went to the Mickey. I went to my Mickey Mouse voice.
Hello, Michelle.
How's the weather in Florida right now?
Awful. Don't get me started.
We're actually calming down here.
Way too hot. Way too hot and humid. And I can barely go outside. My version of going. So this is my way I do gardening now. This is my tip for those of you in hot weather. Put your gardening clothes on, get completely wet with the hose or the pool, and then work while your clothes are wet. It'll make you last at least twice as long then if you go out with dry clothes. And I've tried it in different ways. Like I've gone into the pool and then put my gardening clothes on. Not the same. Got to have the wet clothes.
Okay.
Wet body with dry clothes doesn't last as long.
I don't know how that would. I'm trying to imagine how that would work for me out in the grove, but it's like I don't think so.
You don't think so? It's not.
I don't know.
You might have
it's
to
not,
get.
It's hot not hot enough. Enough. It's that. It's. I don't know that I would like that feel, but.
Well, I don't particularly love the feeling, but I do like the fact that I can just, you know, as soon as I get too hot, I just go completely soak myself. Again, so rinse and repeat, you know, go soak yourself again, continue to work in the garden.
Although I do have one of those shade hats that you can put water in the brim.
There you go.
And it keeps you cool.
Yes. Yes. And Brian bought me one of those personal fan collars, which I think are probably the greatest invention for women with their own weather fronts, AKA menopause. But if you have hearing challenges, you've got two little fans creating white noise right by your ears.
There you go.
Good for people with weather fronts, personal weather fronts. Bad for people with hearing challenges.
That's funny. You know, I want to be really upfront with everybody today. It's not going to be everybody's cup of tea.
Sure.
Because most people are afraid of math and all of that. So I just want to give you a little precursor ahead of time. And then before we talk about this, what I find absolutely fascinating, immersive topic, be a little more general and ask you, Michelle, have you noticed, I've noticed with clients that for some reason, it's like not little things are happening in their life, big ass things are suddenly starting to happen.
And
I don't think it's Mercury retrograde. I don't know that we have sunspots, but it's, you know, I just got done with my run at the castle, which I was, for those of you that don't know, was the Magic Castle in Hollywood. I was doing 7 nights of shows out there.
Woohoo!
And I was very flattered. I am very flattered that they asked me to be part of their 60th anniversary celebration this year. So it's a very, very, humbling and very flattering. But while I'm doing this, right, I still have coaching clients who are writing me, and it's like some big ass life events are just suddenly popping, according to them, out of nowhere. And I'm wondering if you've noticed that trend, and I'm wondering, you know, what happens in a couples therapy, for example, couples counseling, they don't grow in little bits and little changes. It's like just it's a big ass change
at once.
Yeah, and then they plateau, right? And then it's another giant leap. I just didn't know what your thoughts were on that.
I think from an emotional, energy, spiritual, body perspective, it's exhausting. So you know, I definitely have seen that happen too. The challenge is it is it an age group thing? So I'm trying to break it down by age group. So my college age, high school age students seem to be going through big changes in transition, some health scares. So there's big changes there, you know, moving away from family. Then there's what their family's dealing with, right? Empty nest is a big change. Moving, divorces, you know, so people, I think my perspective is a little bit skewed in that my outside world. So if I think about my family, my friends, they all seem to be relatively stable at the moment. But my client population is coming to me for a reason. So there's a lot going on for my client population. So that, I guess that's what I want to say is there's a lot of big changes, big things going on, multiple things. Like,
so so this then leads to my therapy question, I guess. What do you do as a therapist, if anything, when you have a couple or maybe even an individual and you see them going through these major life changes, mm-hmm. right? Shit's hitting the fan all at once.
All at once.
How do you help them? I mean, our show is keeping your shit together. How do you help them even identify the shit?
A lot of modeling and mirroring, right? Repeating back to people, hey, you might be experiencing some exhaustion because you just finished your PhD, you've moved, you've gotten married in the last year, you know, life skill stressors, or you've just launched a big movie or art project at the same time as your child's off to college, at the same time as your mother's been ill, you know. So I just try to point out there's a really old test called the life change stressors. That's, I want to say it's from the 60s, and you could tell that it's old because when it talks about mortgage stressors, the amount of mortgage.
Oh yeah, I do remember what you're talking about.
I drool over the amount of mortgage that they're talking about being a stressor, but it highlights the various stressors that people go through and then assigns you a score, and it's well-researched, well-documented, it's old, and basically talks about how there's a need for more vigilance the higher your score is. Vigilance in terms of your health, your emotional well-being, your spiritual well-being, your physical well-being when your score is high. And right at the top is death of a spouse, divorce or separation, moving. Those are kind of of the top three. And then a job, major job change is the fourth. So, and then illness. Major illness in there. So if this is sounding familiar to any of our listeners, slow down, take a look, maybe look it up, the life stress changer, take it, see what your stress amount is, give yourself a break and some compassion, give yourself permission to say no to as many superfluous things as possible. Like maybe you don't have to go to every birthday party that your child's schoolmates are having because you don't get any downtime to do your laundry. Maybe that's okay that you just have a couple of stay-in weekends while you're dealing with all these massive changes.
So for those of you listening, I just looked this up. I had forgotten all about this test. I haven't seen it in years. Uh-huh. It's known as a number of things and readily available online for you to take them. It's been, I can see it's called the Recent Life Changes Questionnaire. Okay. It's called the Life Change Index Scale.
That's what I was talking about. The Life
Change Index Scale. The Holmes Ray Stress Inventory, the Life Stress Test, and on and on. And it lets you go through and actually pick not only stressors, but time frames. Like, has everything been happening in the last 6 months? Have things been happening in the last 12 months or more? I thank you for bringing that up. Yeah. I also recommend to people that Gail Sheehy, unfortunately Gail has died now, but take a look at her book Passages. She has the original Passages book and then an updated revised one. And I think it's somewhat freeing when you recognize that other people are going through the same things at different points in their lives.
Yes.
And so you don't feel alone, right?
Exactly. And when you reckon, the other trick, here's a quick trick. Once you realize how many stressors you've been dealing with, look at the rest of the list and determine how many of those things on the list you've already dealt with and survived. Yeah.
And
because survived. If you can remember that you had enough grit and resilience to get through a bunch of other stuff, you can remind yourself every day, no matter how tough it is, I can get through this because I've been through worse or the same or others, right?
Sometimes I agree.
With teenagers or sometimes college students, particularly teenagers, I will tell them that is one of the most stressful times of your life in that, like, you might not be worried about paying the bills, but you maybe don't have a car to drive and escape. You don't have a lot of options and choices because you're living under someone else's rules and regulations. You don't have the resources to do things for yourself that other people can do when you're an adult, you know, take yourself out, go visit a friend. You know, there's a lot of rules that you're stuck with as a teenager.
Yeah.
And you just have to somehow figure out how to art your way, music your way, dance your way, exercise your way through it. And those same skill sets apply to the rest of us, no matter.
By the way, I remember being a teenager. I think you do too, Michelle.
I do.
And I just want to let all of our younger audience members know that the older you get, the smarter we will actually look in retrospect.
Well, there's that. Yes.
we're not as dumb as you think we are.
Yeah. And for parents out there of teenagers, it's pretty normal for your kids to lose respect or belief in you sometime around age 15. And then sometime around 27, 28, 29, 30, they start to go, oh, yeah, my parents are a resource. So just hang in there. If you've got a child between about 14 or 15 and 27, just hang out. They'll turn around.
Well, I've still always loved the Mark Twain saying. I've said it on the show before, but I'll repeat it here because it bears worth repeating. And I'm paraphrasing, it's not the exact quote, but I love that Mark Twain said, when you have a child, open up the pickle barrel and put them in the pickle barrel and close the top up. When they become teenagers, close up the hole.
Wow. I don't know what to make of that saying.
That's just it. Bottom line is, let them out when they're adults. They're not done cooking yet.
Oh, they definitely are not done cooking yet, but.
All right. Speaking of, I know I'm just having fun. I'm having fun now because we're going to move into now a topic that Michelle and I have chatted about for quite a while off air.
Yep.
And she keeps saying, okay, let's talk. Let's do a show about it. And I keep saying, I don't think anybody will be interested. And I finally said, okay, I'm ready to do this. I'll share some of my stuff. And it all began with a story that I've told Michelle a few times. And that as a kid, not that I'm not now, I was geeky, nerdy, weird, freak of nature, all of that stuff. And I was put in to sports to see if that would help. And I didn't feel graceful. I didn't feel in tune with my body and time with it. And my assistant baseball coach, who happened to have played for the San Diego Padres, he had retired out of professional baseball.
Wow.
He pulled me aside one day and he said, can I just talk to you for a minute? And he sat down and took a piece of paper. And I don't remember what he wrote on it. That's the interesting thing. But he took a piece of paper. And he said, I think I know how to help you. He said, let me explain the game of baseball in general. And let me explain batting, right? Hitting a ball in terms of math. Let me put all these in a mathematical formula for you. And it changed everything for me. Mm-hmm. Everything. And because of that, I have ever since then looked at the whole world in terms of mathematical equations. Mm-hmm. Now, before we scare everybody off, and I've talked about this enough, that's why I keep saying, I know I'm going to scare a lot of people off because it's like, what the hell are you talking about, Scott? Right? We go to school and in school you go, how am I ever going to use that? Right? Who needs trigonometry? Who needs geometry? Who needs calculus? And it turns out I'm really good at all those things. And I'm the one that helps the kids and the grandkids with math. Because it's like, I just look at it. I just look at it and they come alive to me. So I found this wonderful concept from he's a cosmologist. His name is Max Tegmark. And I originally ran across this because he came up with something called the theory of everything, TOE.
It is
based on what's called a mathematical universe hypothesis. And again, I don't want to get too deep into it because you really don't need to know. But the whole hypothesis is that the entire structure of the universe is a mathematical structure. And all of a sudden, everything I had been learning made sense. And what he said was the physical universe is not merely described by mathematics, but it is mathematics. So I just want everybody to understand that what I'm about to talk to you about are mathematical structures that when I explain them, actually become very visually and emotionally clear. It's not math. It's not 1 + 1 = 2.
Okay.
It's not that kind of thing. So it started with that. And then we're calling today the secret math of surrender. And I thought it would be important, right? It doesn't help you to describe 1 + 1 = 2 if you don't know what the frick 2 is.
Right.
What that even means.
Right.
And so I thought maybe you and I could just have a quick, brief discussion on even the concept of surrender.
Okay.
For me, I have fought the concept of surrender mightily. Right. It's like I'm a fighter. I'm a warrior. Uh-huh. It's like, excuse my language, folks, but fuck you and your surrender.
I'm
the scorched earth. I take no prisoners approach.
Yes, we sometimes agree on that. My friend and I had an argument about, well, you know, Michelle, the wall is there. You need to accept that the wall is there. And I was like, not if you get a big crane with a ball on the end of it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That wall is not permanent.
Until, and again, I'm going to go back to and tie it in with recent events. I tied it in with my knee replacement surgery.
Okay.
And I have discovered that putting Scott back together is a whole lot harder than taking Scott apart.
Ah, yeah.
And with that in mind, I learned, I'm not going to pretend to be an expert at it, to surrender to the impermanence of the pain situation for a while.
Yeah.
And I had to, you know, we did a show with my cousin, Danny Miller, who yes. wrote the book, Losing Control.
Yes.
And I think you may have heard us go back and forth because I am not losing control, Danny. Everything is in my control. You know, screw the serenity prayer. There's right. All of that. I have issues with all these things. And, okay. And yet I've learned firsthand that there is a concept of surrender that does not mean giving up. There's a concept of surrender, which means allowing yourself to be in the situation. I believe it was, and I'm not trying to be crude here, but it didn't make any sense to me until I heard Roshi Joan Halifax talking about the concept of surrender. And it just rocked my world. When you start thinking about the things in your life, you actually do surrender to all the time. You're constantly surrendering. You surrender to sleep. You surrender to lovemaking. You surrender to
weather,
breathing. There are things that you actually, you surrender to, and that does not mean failure or weakness or giving up.
Yeah.
That's an important concept for what we're about to talk about today.
Okay.
And I don't know how you feel from a therapist standpoint.
I do like the serenity prayer because I do think I love that we really do need to remind ourselves that we are not in control of people, places, and things, and sometimes even feelings, especially other people's feelings, right? So giving people the autonomy for us to let go and accept them as they are. So that is a psychological accepting people for who they are. Doesn't mean you have to have them in your life 100% of the time or 50% of the time, but trying to change them is not one of, we cannot change other people. It's hard enough to change ourselves.
In light of what you just said, I do want to put a quick little caveat in here. You will never hear me use the term surrender and equate it to reconciliation.
Okay.
They're not what the same thing. So surrender, and we'll get into it when I deal with the math formula. Surrender is stopping fighting yourself.
Yeah,
it's that internal release.
Right. Internal release. Okay.
And I've joked about this before with my Ho'oponopono training. You know, one of the people I learned from, Dr. E. Haleakala, he always said, and it's brilliant, right? Have you ever noticed when there's a problem, you're there?
Yeah.
That's the surrender concept I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Realizing and then saying, I don't have to keep doing this to myself. Because they're not going to change. The outside world is not going to change.
Right.
And I've likened this before, right? The sun is wonderful. Right. It's up there in the sky.
Right.
If you stay out there too long, it burns you.
It will burn the crap out of you.
The sun is not going anywhere.
No.
You make the choice to remove yourself from the sun or put on sunscreen. Sit under a shade or whatever it is. So it's always been a nice little metaphor for me. It's like the sun is wonderful, but it'll burn the hell out of you if you stay there too long.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So with that, can we jump into some, do you mind me sharing some general everyday concepts, or do you have a question?
I have a question. You said surrender is not reconciliation. What do you mean by reconciliation then?
Well, so for example, again, I'm going to go back to the Serenity Prayer, for example,
or
any of, I don't know the 12 steps. Do you know the 12 steps?
Most of them.
Most of them. Isn't there people on our show have talked about it where, don't you
surrender to a power?
Amends.
Yeah. You make a list, but that's number four. And I think around step eight is your amends.
So I've always had a problem with that one too, by the way. and it's not, by the way, it's not making amends.
Okay.
My problem is getting the amends.
Oh, okay.
Because at some point, and again, I know this sounds harsh, but I've got very strong personal boundaries. And when you lie to me, when you break my trust, when you do this, I go back to the old story, Michelle, and I don't want to rehash it, but it's the story of the tortoise and the scorpion, and the scorpion needs a ride across the river and keeps promising the turtle, if you just let me ride on your back, just please let me ride on your back. I won't sting you. And the turtle says, no, you're going to sting me. And the scorpion swears that it will not sting the tortoise. And the tortoise finally says, okay. And they get halfway across the river. The scorpion stings the turtle. The turtle, in the throes of death, they both are going down now. And the turtle says, but you promised you weren't going to sting me. And the scorpion says, what did you expect? It's my nature. Right?
Yes.
I have a hard time with scorpions constantly asking for amends. So
got it.
I can surrender and stop struggling. That does not mean I have to keep giving the scorpion a ride on my back.
Okay. Now that's what you mean by your reconciliation.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I can have connections. I can be polite. I can, you know, understand that everybody is, I think, doing the best they can do. Thank you, Brené Brown. But it's right. Even with that, there are some people out there that are toxic.
Yeah.
And so that surrender can be reconciliation. It just doesn't mean reconciliation. It doesn't mean I can surrender in my own head, in my own body, in my own spirit, and never see you again. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
I just let you go. You don't exist to me anymore.
Yep. Just because you accept someone for who they are, that's what I was trying to say about accepting someone for who they are, doesn't mean that they have to be your best friend and the person that you spend a ton of time with. And to correct myself, it's step nine that you make direct amends to people wherever possible and accept when to do so would injure them or others.
Got it. So Actually, that might be an interesting show at some point to talk about the whole concept of amends, because
go over the whole 12 steps, because they're very, very powerful.
Okay, we can do that. So let me real quickly go through some formulas, math equations that you actually have probably already heard before, just so you start getting acclimated to where we're going to move with what I'm going to talk to you about. First, I think everybody in business has heard of SMART goals, S-M-A-R-T, right? Developed in 1981 by George Doran. And here's the formula: specific plus measurable plus achievable plus relevant plus time bound equals effective goals. That's the SMART formula. And it's been used time and time again with great results for setting goals, making sure that you have well-defined targets, helping keep you achievable, and then you get clear timeframes on it. Those are SMART goals. That's a math formula. Just so everybody starts understanding, oh, wait, it's not all of this fancy stuff, right? For all of us that have, you know, dealt with decision theory, and particularly in the decision or of the economics field, you've heard of cost benefit analysis,
of course,
right? In the business field, right? So that is that if the benefits, now, do you guys know that there's that little mathematical symbol? It looks like less than or greater than, right? I'm trying to make this descriptive, right? So less than or greater than. So it's the benefits and then the greater sign symbol.
The benefits are greater
than costs, COS. So if the, start thinking of this visually, if the benefits are greater than the costs, there's a favorable outcome or a favorable decision. It's a math formula. And again, it helps you decide whether the benefits outweigh the costs. And if they do, then it's a no-brainer. We've talked before about President Eisenhower and the Eisenhower decision matrix. That again is a math formula, where you take not important, important, urgent, and not urgent. You weigh them all together, and it helps you create priorities for your life. And that he happened to have put them in a quadrant, in a matrix.
In a quadrant matrix.
And I love, where's the one I wrote down here? The Pareto principle. We've talked about this, I think, before. The 80-20 rule, people know this by, which was invented by Vilfredo Pareto. And it's literally, here's the formula. 80% of results come from 20% of your efforts.
I know.
So you think about everything in your life. Now, he happened to do it with zoning and land use. And then it spread because everyone went, oh my God, I'm spending 80% of my time on 20% of my problem clients. I'm getting 80% of my money from 20% of my activities.
Also, think about it. Okay, you know, off air, I told you that I accidentally prepared for a different concept for today. Take the drama out of trauma. And I was thinking the 80-20 principle is also like, do you spend 80% of your emotional energy on the 20% of dramatic people in your life? And if so, you might want to look at that.
Yeah, you want to flip it, right?
Yeah, you want to flip it. 20% on the drama.
Or just stop the drama and get out of the drama triangle entirely. I did come across one that I found interesting that I thought you would like, Michelle, because we've talked before about the flow state and peak performance. And I'm not even going to pretend to understand, to pronounce the psychologist's name who came up with flow state. His first name is Mihaly, but it's Csikszentmihalyi, and I'm butchering that name, and I apologize. But here's the formula for flow. Skill level plus challenge level equals flow state. And what that formula means is seeking activities that match your skill level to challenge that. You seek activities that match your skill level to the challenge level, and you get optimal engagement with whatever it is that you're doing. So again, think that you just kind of think about this. You take your skill level, you take the challenge that's being met, and that will tell you what the flow state is. So those are just, you know, a few. There are so many in our lives every day where math actually is dictating what we do. You just don't realize it. And I thought from there, it might be really interesting to at least tell you how I look at surrender and letting go, if you don't mind me sharing it.
Oh,
and
yeah.
As we go through this, you, Michelle, on behalf of the listening audience, just ask me questions as we go through it.
Okay.
And so the first formula that I use is X. So the letter X equals 1 over T. And I'll explain that in a minute. So there's the math formula. X equals 1 over T. X. So you may remember this from school, right? When you have these variables.
It's a variable. Mm-hmm.
The variable represents something intangible. Uh-huh. And because it's a variable, that's why it's a letter, you, the end user, have to fill it in order to get the final equation.
Mm-hmm.
And so here it is, X. So remember, the formula is X equals 1 over T. X equals the level of surrender or acceptance that you have in a situation. That's what we're solving for. Remember, today is the secret math of surrender.
Okay.
So that's X. We want to solve for X. How do I get to a place of surrender? How do I get to a place of acceptance? How do I get to a place of I'm not beating myself up or I'm not stressed, right? Okay. Wouldn't everybody love to solve for that?
Yeah, yeah.
And so in order to get there, we have to solve 1 over T. And the interesting part of this is T, I'm going to do this backwards, T represents time.
I was wondering, okay, time.
1 represents the starting level of surrender that you have. It's your base camp, right?
Okay.
It's where you are already. When, what's the best way to put this? If time is equal to 1, if time is equal to your starting point,
okay,
then you're already there. You're already accepting this. You don't even need this.
1/1 is 1. You're already at acceptance. Okay, got it.
So the whole point of this formula is to demonstrate to you mathematically that as T, time, increases, the value of X, surrender, decreases.
Right?
And so again, it's just a very, I think, it's a good symbolic representation.
So work that out in an example for us, because it's the math did lose me a little bit. So as time increases, the value of surrender decreases.
Here's the concept. The process of surrendering or accepting a situation, we all know, is subjective. And is usually tied in with the amount of time passing.
Okay.
The need to surrender. We don't need to surrender 100 years from now.
Okay.
Right? Usually the stress, the angst of it all is immediate.
Okay.
So I have found, at least, that the closer in time you are to a stressful situation, the less you're accepting. Right? Now you're going through the stages of grief.
Okay.
To put it another way, you're angry, you're in denial, you're deflecting. Right? You're doing all of these things. You're not accepting. You haven't surrendered anything. And then as you get a little more space and a little more breathing room, right? Alternatively, and I'm just going to say this because I'll give you another formula here in a minute. Alternatively, there are situations where, God, what's a great way of saying this? I'll just give you the equation because it'll make sense. The equation, if you don't want to use the one I just gave you, is S, like Scott, equals E, like Edward, over R, Richard.
Okay.
And this one's going to be a little more challenging for people to accept. But for those of you who follow this kind of stuff, it will make sense. S represents the strength right? The benefit, the outcome of surrendering. E represents the current challenges or difficulties or obstacles. And R is your resistance or emotional struggle when you're facing challenges. All of this meaning that the strength of your surrendering is determined by taking them, by dividing the magnitude of your challenges by the level of your resistance. How bad are you fighting this? So I've taken time out of that particular equation to ultimately reflect that when your resistance to acceptance in a situation, your resistance to surrender is minimized, it's kind of a no-brainer at that point. When you remove the resistance, your ability to surrender increases. And again, both of these are simply objective math formulas that for me indicate that if all of us, as part of keeping our shit together, could minimize our emotional resistance, and you let go of the resistance, you surrender to it, then we are in a place where we get to effectively handle challenges. Does that make sense?
I think so.
And I know it, right? All very counterintuitive here. Because I'm not silly. I can understand that, you know, when I start talking about variables and I start talking about the passage of time and I start doing all that, it ultimately comes down to this is my way of visualizing. Because it makes sense to me. Everything works in math for me as symbolic representations. There's another concept in here, if you don't mind me just kind of adding to this. It goes back, remember, Albert Einstein, one of the greatest physicists, mathematicians out there. And at one point, again, I'm going to paraphrase, he talked about one of the greatest questions that you can ask yourself is the universe friendly or not? Right? And so I invite all of our listeners to ask that question. At your core, is the universe friendly? Do you believe that? What is your worldview? Because if you manifestly believe the world is not friendly,
right,
can you see then how a different equation comes up?
Right.
Put it another way, what's your faith? And I don't mean this religiously. Now, you grew up in a very religious family.
I did.
And I'm going to presume here that I'm not a mind reader, but I played one for the last week. I'm going to presume that part of the faith that you grew up in is that God will take care of everybody if they have enough belief in that particular protocol of your religion, right?
Yes, yes.
Every religion has that, has their own form of, we're going to keep you safe and loved. But you got to follow their protocols.
Yeah.
I'm simply saying, I want to go back more to a rudimentary mathematical equation, and that is, if I tell you friendly universe equals, and then you fill in the blank what that means to you.
Okay.
Right. So for example, for me, friendly universe equals safe.
Okay.
I'm safe. It's all going to be okay. If I write not friendly universe equals, obviously the 180 from that is not safe. Danger, danger, Will Robinson. And so start exploring this just from that simple equation alone. Is the world safe for you?
Right.
Let me just say one thing, because if the world is safe for you, you have a whole other equation you get to put in here in order to get surrender. And that is you get to add the plus faith part to this.
Okay.
Right. Or you can say plus safe or plus friendly. right? Uh-huh. You take whatever's going on in the world, add to it that it's all going to be okay. I know you have a challenge with everything happens for a reason. I have not gone there. I have simply said, does everything actually work out okay in the end?
Yeah. I also have a challenge just in general with this whole discussion. Well, this mm-hmm. latest discussion, but I don't know if now's the time to
This is part of the fun concept of our show, right? Because you and I do not see eye to eye all the time.
Well, okay. So number one, if you have seen the Barbie movie.
I have not.
Or if you were born a woman in the world. The Barbie movie highlighted for the first time that I can remember in a movie in a lighthearted way, because she's in the Barbie universe where it's very safe and it's all like women can do anything and everything is perfect and wonderful. And she comes into the real world based in Los Angeles. And she's like, suddenly I have a feeling of angst. Like, it's not okay here. And I will tell you, this is a concept that I really struggle getting across to my men, is that women learn from a really young age that the world is not safe for them. And I think that's true for people of color too.
I'm going to add to this. I'm going to add a story.
Yeah.
And I was just talking to performers at the Magic Castle. We have downtime. We all, you know, all the entertainers get together and we talk with each other and tell stories.
Yeah.
And one of the female performers, was telling me a story of her being at a venue. This is years ago.
Sure.
Where another female performer was picked up and carried out the door and put out on the street and said, you don't belong here.
Wow. Why? Yeah.
She was female.
Wow.
Wow. Can you imagine that happening today?
Well,
but you're right.
If we look at rape, if we look at sexual assault, if we look at child abuse, just the world is skewed, and that's not taking into consideration the drama and the trauma and exposure and lack of safety for LGBTQA population, and the likelihood like dramatically increases if you're trans. And if you're a person of color, like, so it's a challenge because like, I want to have faith that I don't walk around all the time thinking everybody's out to get me, but I'll give you a really honest, I'm going to give you a really honest example. Brian and I were out for the first time with our vaccines, like exploring a particular area. And we were just going from restaurant and bar to bar and like just having a good time. We were having a great time. He started not to feel good and went home and texted me, said, I'm going back to the hotel. I'll meet you there. And I don't know where this came from, but I honest to God's truth, I suddenly felt I am alone and unsafe and have to get myself back to the hotel by myself.
Okay.
So there was something about being with a big, tall, strong white man, although he does say that I give him more credit than credit. Like, I think he's more capable than he is capable. And I get that. Like, it's hard for men too, to be put in that box, right? But there, it was a really weird, and I've traveled across the world by myself. Like, I've traveled where I'm really conscious and I have my conscious awareness, but it was this strange. And so it's not like I don't go places by myself. But when I go places by myself, I am in the mindset of being hypervigilant. And when I'm with him, I get to relax a little. And that is a weird feeling that I don't think a lot of men have ever experienced in their life, let alone experiencing it on a regular basis when you walk out the door.
So I appreciate what you're saying. I appreciate what you're saying. The interesting thing for me is, actually, you're not disagreeing. What's happening here?
The formula still applies.
The formula still applies, and that's what I want. I'm so glad you brought that up.
Good.
At the very end here, I'm going to share something from Dr. Amy Johnson that I learned through a website called Tiny Buddha, and I just love that website.
Oh, I love Tiny Buddha.
And you know, the reality is what you're describing doesn't change the formula.
Yeah. What you're describing, tell me the formula again. Yeah.
What you're describing is telling me you haven't surrendered because it's not safe to do that.
It's not safe to surrender in certain circumstances.
And again, I want to go back to the I want to go back to the focus here. And that is everything we do and experience and feel and decide is all a mathematical formula. And don't confuse the formula with the experience.
Right.
The formula just describes the experience. That's all that's happening. And and the beauty of this for me is that if it's a formula, then we can play with the formula.
Yeah.
If we know that's what it is, we can change the experience, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
As we get near the end of the show here, I'll give you one more formula in light of what you just said. And again, it's from a lady by the name of Dr. Amy Johnson. And I love this one. Ready?
Yep.
Surrender, which is what we're talking about. Surrender equals complete acceptance of what is, plus faith that everything is well, even without your input. I must say this again. Surrender, which we have talked about, is not giving up. Surrender is the letting go of conflict, letting go of stress, letting go of danger, letting go of angst, right?
Yeah.
The release. So that, if that's what you're looking for, you get that if you get your level of surrender and it is determined by the level of your acceptance of what is, combined with the level of your faith that everything is okay, even if it looks like it isn't. For you, in your example, it's not okay.
Yeah.
And so you can see, even if you accept the world as it is, you see things as they might be, there's that little pinging that's going on looking out in the world for danger.
Mm-hmm.
That's saying it's not safe here and it's not safe there and it's not safe to be a woman and it's not safe to be alone and it's not safe at night, right? All of these things add up to a reduction in your ability to surrender and let go of stress.
Yeah. And you could, can you see, like, no wonder people in minority groups, women, really struggle with feeling like they're seen and heard by another group that maybe has an easier access to surrender.
Well, but again, you know? I don't know that anybody, this isn't a privilege thing, right? Where some people have a greater breadth of options and some people have a greater breadth of access to wealth and tools and things. You always, in my opinion, everybody individually has the ability to surrender at whatever level they want. You always have that ability. And again, I'm going to look at Viktor Frankl in a concentration camp. Let's just take it to the extreme. Right? Here's a man who wrote a lot about getting to a place where he was comfortable and he had surrendered. That does, again, not mean waving a white flag. We're not talking the two different things, right?
Right.
I'm simply saying everybody, I believe, has the ability to choose a level of surrender that they would aspire to.
Okay.
Now, how you get there, again, if you're using Dr. Amy Johnson's formula, is, okay, how far can you go in accepting the situation? And that's not weakness. That's not a defensiveness. That's not weaponizing it, right? That is a whole nother show, right? What acceptance is. That maybe your 12 steps, God grant me the serenity. You know, I've got a problem with it. By the way, when I get stuck, it's usually at the acceptance phase of surrender. I have a real hard time. You know, I go back to the RFK quote. Some people see things as they are, right? That whole quote. I look at things that never were and say, why not?
Why not?
Right? That I'm not accepting. I'm saying more. There can be better. So I get stuck at that formula. It dictates the level of my surrender and calmness and peace of mind. And then you add to it the question, what is my faith? What is my belief, if you don't want to use faith? What is my model of the universe? Is it friendly? Mm-hmm. Can I look out and see all this tragedy and the horribleness, right? And let's just be, mm-hmm. let's be honest with each other. Let's look mm-hmm. at the fires in Lahaina.
I know.
I love Lahaina, right?
I do too. I'm so sad. Right?
One of my favorite pieces.
I know of people places, there.
Yeah, one of the yeah. favorite places in the world. And can I actually have faith that everything is and will be okay, right? There's a test of that.
Right.
And to the level that it tests you, yeah. you don't have surrender. Again, yeah. I don't want to confuse what we're presenting today with mm-hmm. changing your model of the world. I'm not talking about what you experience. I'm simply saying we can measure it.
Yeah, we can measure it.
And the beauty it versus... of it is, I think it was Stephen Covey that said, if we can measure it, we can change it.
Mm-hmm. There's also Mr. Rogers, who said that if it's mentionable, it's manageable. So even given the space of sharing what came up for me as you were talking, because in a sense, like, do we all have equal access to the surrender? It still feels like the formula works, but my privilege is different than other people's privilege. I don't have the same level of privilege.
But I think we may be using privilege. I think you're using it drastically different than I am.
I am sure I am.
And I'm going to say this, but I disagree. You and I disagree at times. I think you see a level of victimization
that I don't see. I do. And I don't sustain it. Just for those of you out there listening to us discuss this, I cannot sustain it in my head 24/7 because it leads to feeling immobilized and I can't sustain it. So I go in and out of letting it into, and that's my privilege, is that I actually have enough privilege that I can escape having to face this every day. Is that I have enough safe spaces in my world that I don't have to worry about my safety or surrendering or faith that everything will be well all the time. And then I go to Neil deGrasse Tyson things where he says the universe is out to get us, people, from a scientific space perspective. There are meteorites coming for us all the time, you know. But I do also say yes to risky things when it comes to humans by using my gut instinct and having wonderful experiences that, you know, if I was listening to every myth that's out there about human beings and the unsafety of a city, I would have never experienced. I've been quite lucky in a sense that many, many things have worked out advantageously for me. And again, that's probably part of my privilege, is that things have worked as a straight white person, you know, like that's probably part of my privilege, is that I don't have as many personal traumas as people have with.
So again, I think we may be using privilege and you and I using them in two different ways, because there's an aspect of it that you're talking about that I heartedly agree with.
Right.
I am simply saying
the formula.
Yeah, it's the formula. It's
the
math.
Formula is the formula. Right? It's math.
Mm-hmm. Nobody using 1 + 1 = 2 is more privileged than anybody else. Now, there may be some privilege in whether you learn the formula, mm-hmm. but the formula itself is privilege neutral.
It's the formula.
Mm-hmm. It's the formula. Math is neutral.
Mm-hmm. Math is neutral. Yes.
But again, I agree with you. There are some mm-hmm. people who are more privileged than others as far as education or learning these skills. And that's a different discussion for a different day. Right. What I'd like to leave us with, because of what you just said, the whole concept of privilege and circumstances and the worldview, and that sometimes the place, you know, the world's a scary place and not everything happens for a reason. I've mm-hmm. mentioned Viktor Frankl to people before, and I want to leave you with two quotes from him with respect to this. Again, realizing math is math. It is not privileged. It is not biased. It is not anything other than an objective reflection of what is. 1 + 1 = 2, and it will always equal 2. Mm-hmm. That's it. It's just the equation is the equation.
Right.
So I'll leave you with a couple of things. I've always loved this quote, first and foremost. The one thing you can't take away from me is the way I choose to respond to what you do to me.
I love that quote.
Right? There, by the way, mm-hmm. is part of the equation that I've given you earlier.
That makes
and
sense.
And then the last one, he's got a lot of them, but this is a good one. Life is never made unbearable by circumstances, but only by lack of meaning and purpose. Mm-hmm. So again, I'm through these equations, whether you buy into them, use them, understand them, whether it's organically adapted by you or not, I simply want our listeners to take this moment, mm-hmm. reflect on how do you look at the world?
Mm-hmm.
Is it friendly mm-hmm. or is it not friendly? And that's going to dictate where you ultimately go with your level of surrender.
Okay. Now,
with that, you want to give them a little tease of next week?
Yes. We have a wonderful colleague and friend of mine from way back in my UCLA undergrad days, who's gone on to be an incredible human being. We have a colleague of mine, Dr. Nabil El Ghouri, coming in to talk about learning to live with stress better. He's a psychologist and used to work for APA in Washington, D.C., and used to head up the California Association of Marriage and Family Therapists. He's a brilliant, wonderful human being. I hope that you will join us and tune in to hear him give us his tips and tools.
Wonderful. With that, thank everybody for listening. Please like, subscribe, and share us on your favorite podcast platform. And with that, we will see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You've reached the end of another episode of Keeping Your Together in a Stressed World with Michelle Post and Scott Grossberg. If you like our show, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate our broadcast, and leave a review. The podcast is for general information only and not intended to be legal or mental health advice, nor the formation of a lawyer-client, nor therapist-patient relationship. Stay tuned for our next episode, and thank you for listening.